back with another episode of the Geek Whisperers. I'm Matt Brender.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we're just the three of us for the first time in a while. We'll be digging into something close to our hearts, which is the separation of public and private. But we attack this from public and private personas, but never from this exact angle. So as we are very social, as we are very public in our day-to-day lives, there seems to almost be this natural coupling that the more public we get, the more there are opportunities to take conversations to private channels in order to communicate in different ways. And that seems to be an interesting byproduct of the social media world. So we're going to talk about going private in public spaces today on the Geek Whisperers.
And I think a lot about it. In some ways, you know, I got challenged actually recently. I will name that podcaster by Greg Nierman on Speaking in Tech. And he asked me why I was at all concerned about the NSA, because I seemed to tell everything I'd ever thought on all social platforms at all times. And I answered, actually, ironically, I do live a much more public life than I lived 4 or 5 years ago, but I also have innumerably more private conversations as a result of it. My activity on social media has broadened my world. I have a much larger community than I did 4 or 5 years ago by tenfold. And as such, you end up relating to people differently, and you actually end up developing friendships or having a work conversation because there's a level of trust that requires more privacy. So I've noticed that the more public I become, the more conversations get driven to private channels.
Well, isn't this just a manifestation of one of the things that we say, or one of the things that you say a lot, Amy, is that social media is just a platform? I mean, for years we've been saying, or I've been saying anyway, you know, social media, compare it to PowerPoint or the telephone, right? There's not a department of PowerPoint in your company, or a department of the person that uses the telephone.
Matt calls the PowerPoint department marketing.
Well, I mean, you know, there's somebody that works on PowerPoints.
Telephone department is sales. Yeah, no, this is all lining up perfectly with the order.
Yeah, well.
I'm sorry, John.
Oh, man. But you know, we say that without, and it's a very abstract concept. Everybody kind of nods their head, and we tell social media practitioners, well, you know, you probably won't have social media in your job title in 5 years because it's going to change. But I think this is a real life manifestation of that. Social media is a set of tools that we use, but what we do on top of it is we have relationships, we run programs, we do some business activities, and some of that requires public social media conversations, and some of that requires private conversations, right?
That's exactly right, John. And I think that's what is really fascinating to me. This conversation we were having reminds me of a story where I was using Twitter as an engineer at EMC, and I saw a customer who was very angry, and it happened to be on a product that I was familiar with. And I decided to engage and say, hey, that doesn't sound like it's working correctly. What can I do for you? What's happening? I let him yell at me a bit publicly and kind of showed him the way of the what it should be doing. And then privately, over direct messages, because this was on Twitter as a platform, we were able to really dig into the details, and he started offloading more of his anger in the private area while we were having a positive conversation in the public area. So just thinking from the perspective of that individual, I gave them kind of a release valve so that they didn't have to air all the dirty laundry publicly. And then for the company that I was working with at the time, I allowed them to keep face, if you will.
Now, did this gentleman then file a support request?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I ended up routing him into support. But sometimes, as we all know, the keyboard is almost too immediately logged into our social platforms. So even before we'll file a ticket or call support of any company that we work with, whether it's public domain or enterprise tech, we love to bitch about it first on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. I'll text Amy, I don't know, some outlet will happen before I actually get to that ticket. And I think it's just a function, well, you know, whether we accept it or not, it's a function of the immediate availability of this world.
Human nature. And I think it gets back to that thing we're saying of social media. We were so enamored of it, but it's like email was in the 80s in some ways. We're, you know, we don't have a department of AOL either. We've evolved. And I think that, but human nature remains the same. So the first thing you want to do when something bad happens is complain, you know, vent, share. And we've got a whole new set of tools and ways to do that. And whereas we might have, you know, stubbed our toe and cursed silently in the darkness before, we have a much more satisfying outlet now.
Yeah, I used to give this talk. It's been a few years, though, talking about process. Because I don't know if anybody's ever worked in a support organization. They are very process-oriented, right?
Guilty.
They,
I think all three of us have.
Yeah, I have peripherally. All right, I was never a tech support engineer, but I was in the support org.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's very process-oriented, right? You've lots of metrics. You look at call times. You look at response times. People pay for enterprise support a whole lot of money. You have very escalation processes. You have people on call to come take the hard problems. You have knowledge bases. You have all these workflows that you go through to solve people's problems. So they have a whole lot of process. And then social came along with zero process, right?
Yeah, breaking all of them.
Yeah, and in some ways we were the pressure release valve, but the whole point is you the whole goal was to get them back into the process that's a private conversation. And we have, I don't know, I mean, VMware only has, we have around the clock, but it's only three or four people who watch. I don't know, I'm sure Cisco and EMC have giant armies of people watching Twitter at least. But I guess going back to the original, your original point, Matt, is that there's reasons to have private conversations on Twitter. We can't do everything in public. I think back in the early days of the web, there were a lot of people who were like, this is going to change everything. Society is going to change. Everything's going to be online. I'm going to put cameras in my house. I'm going to – the first – actually, Justin from Justin.tv, who later – oh, he's on his second or third startup. He just wound down his last startup, which was kind of a handyman startup or something. But Justin.tv guy, he started by live streaming his entire life. That was his thing.
Oh, right.
He started a whole business around it.
I forgot about that too.
But I don't think so much anymore, right? I think it's more of a human nature thing, right? This is a tool. This didn't necessarily change everything.
Yeah. And I really want to center it back on real people. I mean, we all collaborate with marketers, with engineers, with sales organizations, and there seems to be, you know, nothing that's prescriptive on the right amount of public and the wrong amount of public versus private. Yet we all kind of have our own little thermometer of when we get comfortable and when we feel it's time to take it offline. I'm fascinated by it.
And just to jump back in and tie back to the process conversation we're having here, and particularly in terms of tech support, I think that it often is this twofold thing of getting somebody to the appropriate place in the process, which is a public thing. And I think on the vendor side, you often – well, it depends. If it's your fault – you don't necessarily want to have that public. You want to keep it quiet. If it's the fault of the installation or sort of a no fault, you want to have it very public. And I think on the other side, the customer who's being assisted may not want to own to the fault either. So then it becomes a very interesting, you know, there can be a marketeer or SEO drive, I think, to push these conversations to public of like, look how well we resolve this, or simply, here's a problem that a bug fix that we're going to share publicly so that more people can fix it.
Yeah, but it's like the old. I'm going to interrupt you for just a second.
Sure.
It's like the old adage, like if you have to answer something in email twice, you should write a blog post about it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So that everybody can see it. I mean, like I've said this before. Right? Our technical forums gather about 2/3 of the traffic to our entire corporate entity, and that's because people Google a problem and that's where it sends them. So that's separate and parallel, right? That's super valuable. Anyway, yeah. I cut you off.
No, that's exactly it. And I think that slider bar, if you will, between public and private, you know, in some ways, Amazon, let's use Amazon.com reviews, something we can all relate to. It ripped the Band-Aid off of all kinds of products. Yes, we may have gotten reviews about gallons of milk and pens and Three Wolf shirts that we may not actually need, but so many other products. I make an innumerable buying decisions based on that. That public information, good, bad, and ugly, is extremely useful. And you can feel the sort of push and pull between the seller and the consumer of how much information should be public and how much should be private.
Back to the process.
I just think it's interesting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Back to the process idea. I'm stuck on this idea that there's most companies are dropping the ball toward the end of the process because they haven't adopted the platform, the power of the platform. And let me unpack that. So
yep.
I think that most companies are solving really complex problems. And when it's in the case of, you know, it was their fault, yeah, they probably don't want to make a grand gesture out to the world about that. But in the majority of the cases, it's some interoperability problem that's beyond them, or it's some implementation issue that is best known by the public. I think there's a really core element of most companies that's missing in the org chart that takes these support issues and then turns them into marketing collateral. And really,
marketing collateral or support collateral?
Marketing. I'm saying marketing in particular because I think there is opportunity to evangelize how the product works. So it helps draw eyes to it. It also, if you tell it in the right frame of mind, you're actually highlighting the power of quality support and the connectivity of the community around a product. Like there are great stories to unfold there that are really primarily marketing, but they're directly coming out of support. And no one's doing that very well.
That's an interesting point. I had not thought about that. It kind of goes back to our conversation with Daryl Swager, you know, on and the one we just had, right? The community sites are amongst one of the more important pieces of evidence as you look for a piece of software.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's real connective tissue there that just we keep avoiding. And at some point, it's going to be filled in out of necessity.
I think you're right. It's a missing piece. I think it's because marketers are not technologists.
Exactly.
Well, we're circling around the concept of community. Community seems to be so much in the air, but it's the what's the difference between a support community versus a DevOps community or development community? What's, you know, there's a lot of different communities. They serve different purposes, perhaps, but a smart marketer or somebody who can walk in both those worlds could do something pretty amazing to tell a company story through what's being said in those. Has to be authentic. You can't go pull the, you know, oh, this product is great. I don't work for the company.
Yeah. No.
But you know what I mean.
But then there are also private communities. And we talked about that in a previous episode as well. So we're rewarding longtime listeners here, and I hope not confusing any new listeners. When we talked about the velvet rope and the sense of community, right? You need some sort of a barrier to form a community. So for instance, things like the VXperts, you know, in the EMC Elect, and I assume the Cisco Champions, have a private community component where people can talk in private, and that helps them that's another reason to go private, right? You go private, you can have a more intimate, my living room is an intimate conversation, and that is a shared experience between me and my friends.
Yeah.
Well said. And I think it also leads to the conversation back to platform. I think immediately, yes, there are public and private platforms, but also in real life. And you're right. Maybe for a while we had this expectation that we were going to videotape and air everything. You know, reality TV has had a wonderful long run considering, but we in real life, I think we, when we connect, we value and really build rapport through those private conversations.
Yeah.
Well, Amy, do you take a lot of stuff to DM then? Because DM is a crappy messaging system.
I have blown through. I know what the limit of DMs is, and I have blown through it on more than one occasion.
They kind of miss the boat. If you look at WhatsApp and all these things that are in use in Asia, where SMS is very expensive and you know they have multi-billion-dollar valuations, you know that could have been Twitter, right? Twitter started as a phone thing.
It could have been, and honestly, at a certain point, I use it that way. But and there is. We can talk about, I should draw out and we can share on the blog my concept of sort of the hierarchy of privacy, if you will. And in some ways, texting is the last barrier. So DM still has this ability. I can exert some control over it. So we're having a private conversation, but, and sometimes it's because we're traveling, I'm in a plane, et cetera. It's easier to do DM. That's why I've run through them. We're on Twitter. We want to hop off and have a quick side conversation, the fact that it's limited by 140, the fact that some clients don't enable you to send pictures, links, et cetera, very cleanly. Those are barriers to conversation that then drive you to other forms like WhatsApp, text, Facebook messaging, like every platform you can imagine. I have 5 to 10 conversations going on at any time of the day and night. And some of it is my own version of support. It may not be tech support. It's unicorn support. And that can run the gamut. That's a whole unicorn support service, yeah, which we can have a conversation
about. Part of husbandry is trying to communicate with others.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's a full-time business what we do. And there's a lot of, you know, unglamorous logistics that go into, as we've talked about, that top of the iceberg that we want everybody to see. There's plenty going on underneath. And that takes a lot of communication.
Did you see Chris Wall's blog post about how networking is like life or social media or something like that?
Was it about nachos?
No. Oh. It was he references that though, but he posted like he was thinking about networking, how it's like it's like your community. And at the beginning, I'll give a real brief version of it. You have a concept of a default gateway, right? And a machine sends out a packet to the default gateway and it learns how to route it. So you need like a mentor or a friend or a person to introduce you to a community. Once you do that, then once you meet people, they can actually then broadcast an IP address near you so that they become on your local network. And then you can contact them directly without going through the gateway. And then he has a picture of network diagram of himself surrounded by all of his contacts. And so they start to talk to people directly.
That's so genius.
And there was like a third piece too. But the whole point was that you initially get introduced via one person, but then you make the direct connections. And you can have that direct conversation, which is kind of what you're saying here, Amy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, again, if we take this beyond platforms, and I think it's so important that we do, it's the public-private that happens in person, too, at conferences. So I'm curious what you both think about, you know, what the platform supports and prevents in terms of these deeper conversations, when it's appropriate to have it in person versus online. And these are all work conversations. We make all these choices, I think, in our private lives. Mm-hmm. And some of this does obviously spill over into that. But, you know,
well, honestly, and work. Amy, I think we should make a BuzzFeedy kind of quiz where, like, what social media platform are you? Because I'm thinking, I'm like, I actually really prefer the limitations inherent to Twitter. That's why I mean, my voicemail message says, "Hey, tweet me at MJ Brender." And my if I'm falling behind on email, I'll put up a message that says, "Tweet at me if it's important," because I would rather have the succinct brevity that is forced by the character limitation on Twitter, because I consume things much faster when they're broken up by pieces like that.
As much as I kvetch about the limit on the DMs, trust me, if I had to read, it would turn into email again. I do the same thing.
Exactly.
I push to Twitter because it's how much brain power I've got.
Yeah, I will brag and or embarrass myself once again by telling you that I now have 28,747 unread messages in my inbox. So yeah, tweet at me if you want to. Well, no, what I do, and that's actually a very important role. If you are a community manager, influence marketer, social media person, whatever hat you want to wear in 2014, you are a pressure release valve and you are an ombudsman. Because you are a face of the corporation.
Phrase? I don't know that word.
Part of your role is to be that public signpost that can absorb anger like you did, Matt, and then redirect it inside the corporation to fix stuff. So that's why I tweet out my email address. It's jtroyer@vmware.com. I tweet out my cell phone number. It's 510-520-7832. I've never gotten any spam on either one of those. I might get more spam because of the email, but I want people to be able to reach me at any point if the normal processes of the corporate interaction have gone bad,
yeah,
or if they don't know how to reach somebody inside. And that's also one reason why you don't put an intern on this job, because I have been at VMware for 8.5 years and I know where to find people. And if I was, you know, 3 months on the job, I would not.
And you'd also hate your life.
Right.
I mean, if you became the public lightning rod for a company you're brand new to, or just even unfamiliar with the idiosyncrasies of, I think it's doing a disservice to you as an employee to think about employee satisfaction for just a moment. And then also for the company, I mean, that's not good for them either, to have somebody that seems like they never know who to route you to or what to say.
So. Or what the culture is.
Yeah, honestly, corporate culture is a huge part of this.
You have to work with somebody who has a little bit of that in their DNA, and I did support. It wasn't necessarily tech support in the real sense, but when I was the public face of the publishing company I worked for, and I eventually set up a system and a protocol to train somebody else to work with them. But I was many years into that company in one form or the other. I worked for the parent company. I worked for one of the other companies within the family, but I was many, many years in and really steeped in the culture to be able to do that in my sleep. And then I was able to train people. But yeah, that's not a college intern running the strategy there.
I think we have a theme going here, which I didn't realize, which is missing pieces in the corporation, right? I think a lot of people don't staff for that or don't consider that a role.
Yeah,
they don't value it, for sure.
The social facilitator, for lack of better terms, when I'm trying to riff real quick on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, often it's the community manager, but I don't think a lot of times people don't realize that they're going to have that role.
But I feel that, they're very underprepared for absolutely key pivotal position in the brand awareness, brand management, multi-platform disciplinary world that we're in.
It's a multi-disciplined role for sure. And to say, I think community managers, and I'm on this kick too, have been greatly maligned in some ways, undervalued, seen as a job that can be operationalized very easily. But I think that it really does require a lot of these different skill sets. It would not hurt for somebody to do a turn in customer service, as well as with the brand group, as well as with PR. I mean, I could see cross-training that person because they're such a lightning rod.
There is a difference, since we're on this topic, there is a difference between doing it as the branded representative and as a personal representative. We've all been very effective as the personal representative with our faces on our accounts, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. I know people, though, that are much more comfortable. They will answer the email to the corporate account, and they will answer the tweets on the corporate account. But the funny thing is, they don't want to have their name on it, and their bosses don't want to give them the power to have their name on it, too.
Yeah, kind of weird.
True. There's a reason to have that kind of pooled system. I've done both, and it was a release to be able to have two or three of us who were info@workman.com. Mm-hmm. And it was – that's a lot of email to answer 7 days, 7, 24, 365. For one person. And so it was good to have the anonymity so they didn't feel any lack of customer service. I have, in my Cisco role, it's very much me and personally me. And it has been interesting where I've seen it transition. If we talk about the personal and how it gets deeper in time, people know me now, so they feel more comfortable reaching out in some ways. I've become a face for Cisco, whether I meant to and whether Cisco meant for that to happen or not. It's happened. And it's, but then I can also have more kind of interesting and personal conversations. People can ask me more general questions. So it's not always Cisco related, but do you know somebody in the industry who can connect me with this? You're seen as a connector when you're out there. And then that, has all the subdivisions from there.
I'm really glad you dug into that, Amy, the sort of deeper connectivity that you end up having as somebody who is, working through a process or just working through these multiple platforms. People is what it comes down to, as we always get back to with this community building aspect. And there really truly is a deeper authenticity to using these social platforms. And I can tell you the number of times I presented on social media strategy to different parts of the org, because people liked the way I did it, when I tried to say that you can build authentic relationships by being on social and being yourself, I always got the most pushback on that point, that people didn't believe it could be authentic. But then they just like, no, you're trying to sell them something and they're either consuming it or not. So that's bullshit. And it's hard to describe. You just have to tell them they're wrong and to try it for real.
Well, part of that is Twitter, because everything's all mixed together. I used to try to have two different Twitter accounts, and I don't. I guess we're getting back to privacy again. But a lot of the relationship building happens either online or offline at events or on something like Facebook. I'm increasingly convinced over the last few days, especially, that this role, this job we're talking about, this community manager, this influence marketer, is not an online role. I think we're fooling ourselves. That it has been, and I think Amy is a perfect example of it. A lot of her connectivity happens at events.
Exactly.
And it's so interesting. Again, org chart girl, party of one here. I need to get a T-shirt, and it's going to have a big org chart on it. If some companies put social media as part of their digital concern, which I think is interesting, and really firmly allies it with that platform concept, I think, at that point, because it says these are platforms that exist in this world, and this is how we handle and think of them. Or online marketing, which I started my career as an online marketer, but I don't do marketing behind a desk, and I would be ineffective and unhappy as an employee if I wasn't able to get out and go. And I'm very fortunate to have an organizational structure now that's not quite sure what to do with me, but supports me in the quest to figure that out. So we're all trying to figure it out too. And I know different companies have said, oh, you know, maybe you should be CorpCom or maybe you should be this, but they don't always go out and shake hands. And a lot of community management is kissing babies and drinking beer and eating wings and really getting to know people.
I used the word retail politics myself the other day.
Retail politics. That's so good.
It's a lot of pancake breakfast.
I do. Thank goodness I love pancakes.
This is actually blowing my mind. John, what you just said, I'm going to reiterate it because I don't think our listeners could hear it often enough, that this idea of the community manager, the influence marketer, that is not a digital job. It's a public job. And that is where the influence and connectivity come through.
Yeah. And it goes back to our theme. It's because you have to have in-person conversations with people, and you have to have private conversations with people to establish shared bonds and form relationships.
Yeah. And at those events, I think it's interesting to bring up the events, because it may seem quite frequently that everything is just public and giggly and we're all having a good time, but there's actual quality business happening in those micro moments where people are by themselves with a potential customer or a potential peer, or, you know, they're discussing an idea that can really blossom into something meaningful to a business. It's hard to even I, as the in-house metric enthusiast, have a tough time putting an actual business value on that. I just know it when I see it.
Well, and I think about us. Let's use ourselves as an example. And when we have the luxury of being all three of us in a one place at a time, you know, bonds are formed, and we talk about how it changes the podcast. So even the three of us who talk all the time and connect and are charged with using these tools, it changes the flavor of the podcast. I'd be curious to our listeners if you've noticed that and have comments. And you talk about the public-private thing again. We become a little bit of a commodity when it's the three of us together, and it both pulls people in, and I think at some points people say, oh, well, they might be podcasting, they might be recording, we better stand back. So I know we've talked a little bit about that, of, again, private moments in public space. It can create one of those, which I think is interesting.
And let's not forget that the only reason we are even podcasting together remotely from three different parts of the United States is because we met each other in person once or twice over the last few years, and we're just like, huh. In a split second, we made that decision. Like, you're somebody that I need to build something with, and thus we're here.
Well, and we've always talked about that throughout our tenure here on this podcast, but I think it's you know, it's becoming even more important.
It's increasingly interesting as we talk about private versus public, that those private moments one-on-one, you're like, you know, it changes. It changes the relationship, and I think it has profound effects on the public interaction from that day forward.
Well, and if I might lecture our audience, a quick lecture. Of if you can't go to those larger events, or if that's not your cup of tea, then go to your local user groups, go to your local affinity groups. I encourage you to take some of your tech passion and go meet some folks in real life in your immediate world, because it's a great experience. It really deepens your relationships. And for the marketeers and our fellow practitioners, I know it's always events are hard to plan. They're expensive. They are time consuming, but they are so valuable if you create the logistics and the infrastructure and make that easy for people who may have a tendency to put work first and be so busy and not come into those real life opportunities. Make them part of your mix, and you will become a valuable part of the community you're creating.
Great point.
In lecture. But I have to pick up one point that John laid out just a little bit ago. If we're going to have to talk platform, one of the ones I found really interesting is that you mentioned Facebook. One of the things I've noticed a lot is that you end up having parallel conversations. One is the business conversation on Twitter, and one is the other conversation on Facebook. Have you noticed that you can end up talking to the same people? And it's I'm almost thinking like the old cartoon where the sheepdogs pass each other.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you use Facebook a lot more, I think, for business. I used to try to keep it separate, but I certainly don't now.
Gave up too.
Well, in some ways, the Facebook conversations, I mean, one, it's the nature of Facebook and the conversational ability there. They are more jokey. They are more personal. People post pictures of what they're doing and that they wouldn't post on Twitter. So it is different by nature. It's often people who have met each other in real life. So that's certainly an aspect of it. It is funny. Sometimes jokes travel back and forth too. But you know, at this point, going back to the privacy thing, I a lot of my social media activity is a performance at some level, right? My wife and I talk about it. We workshop jokes together before we post them.
Yeah,
love that.
Well, it's holistic. It's different from what we do. I suspect it comes into social selling, although that probably happens. You know, that's going to happen more on LinkedIn. At least the practitioners I'm seeing. We've got to talk about that on the podcast sometime. But it is definitely different. And I don't want to pick on PR or anything, or even sales or marketing. But it is weird.
Oh, let's do.
But it's just weird that we're so connected with all these customers, partners, and fellow employees on all these social things, and we use it to run our jobs. We use it to perform our job duties, which I'm not even sure what they are at this point. But it's certainly not. Let's be careful not to reduce us to the platform. We're the people that we see all our customers' baby pictures.
Yeah,
it's true, and it's a matter of think about. Again, John, I was just sort of waving my arms thinking, where's the mute button? Don't tell. They'll make us stop, because it's, you know, that idea that you could be so bold as to have a conversation or be friends. And certainly we don't want to say this smacks of cronyism. I've been reading some things as well. Again, that's like the car wreck that people can't look away from when we talk about this and the business of it. But it is, you know, it wouldn't work if you weren't sincere. You know, I wouldn't be who I am on Facebook without that sincerity. I don't think anybody is that good of a faker. I think it would just be too exhausting to have this sort of faux public face at all times. And to what point? So if we, in our business, sales, a lot of it is related to relationships and sort of a feeling about the brand, which I'm thinking a lot about brand again lately. And these things are all... they all contribute to it, but I don't think it's the reason you go into it. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think you can go in thinking, oh, I'm going to go influence some people today, or
you know, I'm off to the influence mines. I'm devil's advocate now. You talked about cronyism. Let's talk about cliquishness for a minute, since we're talking about going private and being friends with people. Dunbar's number says we're able to have, 10 close friends and 100 acquaintances, or whatever the order of magnitude is. So when I do have a conversation on Facebook, it has a tendency to be with the same couple dozen, 10, 20, 30 people. and they're well known to all of us, and we won't out them here. But, you know, they're all members of – they're all either, you know, people I know as customers or partners, or often they're VXperts. Are we in danger of, as marketers, you know, just fishing in our own pond? Are we in danger as connectors of just talking to our friends? You know, part of the online component of what we do is that it has leverage. You can find it in Google. People can tweet at us. Are we doing ourselves a disservice by then just – you know, having a bacon party amongst ourselves?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
John, absolutely. I mean, the answer will always be yes. And as with most things that we need to be aware of as human beings that we're inclined to do, whether Dunbar said so or Freud or Darwin, when we're aware of our human tendencies, we also have some higher level reasoning that allows us to put in different heuristics so that we break those. So I feel all three of us actually make a very conscious effort to communicate with people we don't know and to reach out to that person we've never met before whenever we have the opportunity to do so in live events and online. And that inclusiveness and making that part of our mental persona for ourselves, even if we are inclined to be cliquish and be around people we already know and we're already comfortable with, that tactic that we're all implementing, it's something that, you know, we all need to be there and reminding each other that that's needs to be top of mind so that we don't end up isolating ourselves into a nice inner circle that's not very useful to us or our company in any bigger way, to be very kind of brass tacks about it.
Yeah, it's total navel gazing at a certain point. And I think you have to the disciplined side, the professional side. The personal side, I would love to just hang out with my friends at events. And I think probably some people have the impression of that's what the job is. But the professional side is pushing yourself beyond that comfort zone and knowing if you are comfortable, you're probably not pushing yourself hard enough and that you're not seeking out the company of new people and that you're not, you know, thinking about how to bring more people into the circle, how to deepen the relationships that are there, how to strike new ground, et cetera, and what the sort of business objectives are. So, I genuinely love what I do, and I really feel very fortunate to be engaged with the community I'm engaged with, but it is a job. And one of my dirty little secrets, if I may so reveal it, believe it or not, Myers-Briggs, I'm 50-50 introvert, extrovert. And being in public all the time at those events, as anybody can imagine, it can be hard. You have to be on your best behavior. You are a spokesperson for the company. And if people tease me a little bit and you see pictures of me texting, tweeting, et cetera, like that's the pause that refreshes for me. Like I can get a little bit of downtime with that one way to be socially reclusive in public. It's acceptable is to be on your phone for a few minutes. And number one, I probably need to be and get a little bit of work done. And number two, it allows me to decompress so that I can go back and do some of those things that are hard for the introvert me. To go out and meet new people and be on at that level, you know, as is appropriate for my job when we're out in that environment.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I want to bring back to a point on the private versus public world that we're talking about in the conversations. And Amy, you hit on a point about brand management, and I just wanted to riff off this idea that I think possibly part of what drives us private in conversation is actually brand management. And the fact that in many times we get into spaces that we have no authority to speak to publicly.
Yes.
Number one, and then number two, even if we do have authority, we might not want other people to hear it out loud in our out loud voice.
Out loud voice.
Yeah. So I think we've already covered the second point quite a bit, but I think there is a lot to say about that. Sometimes, despite being the people that that others come to and be like, "Oh, you're that guy or that gal from that company. I know you because you're on Twitter and social and at every event." That doesn't give you the authority to speak to everything and have a comment and an interest on everything related to your company.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. We do that almost unconsciously. It is a part of our social media guidelines, is you're not supposed to talk about other parts of the company that you don't know anything about. But you're right. We are put into the profile of an unofficial spokesperson a lot. And the way to get out of that is to have a private conversation and not a public conversation.
Very well said. And sometimes, you know, you can answer the polite, I'll check into this, or, you know, public acknowledgement, if that's what's appropriate. And then, you know, very rare is the case where I've said, you know, hey, I just can't speak to that right now. And it's not been okay. I've rarely had that then republicized or taken back in public of like, oh, she wouldn't help me, or she couldn't, or, you know, she evaded. No, people usually respect the time and space.
On the other hand, it's nice to be able to give your opinion, although I have regretted a few things I've tweeted now and then.
That's exactly the point, right? That
well, that's my other advocate, devil's advocate position of, you know, you said we have to be careful not to exclude. I think that's true. But at the same time, community managers, influence marketers have a right to be human and have friends as well. So it's how do you be private and public?
No, are there topics that you stay away from? I stay away from politics.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, really? Yeah. I kind of like it. We all have our own personas at the same time that I've made friends by having violently different opinions on politics or religion or something else that is for most people generally unacceptable to talk about in public. But you need to know your audience. You need to know how personal your relationship really is. And I think that takes a level of awareness that is very learned throughout life and not something that everyone actually has before they go to an event. It's good to keep in mind. If you're not sure if you should go to that topic with somebody, you probably shouldn't.
Yeah. We're actually having a conversation, and I think I can talk about this in real time. Here's an example of something I'm
sure, John? Because, just between the three of us.
We're having a conversation in our support organization right now about – we now have a bunch of people in a very many channels, not only Twitter and Facebook, but other communities as well, who are ready and eager and friendly, and the culture is right, and we've encouraged everybody to participate. But especially in a support org, there are certain things that either are sensitive, or we don't want to talk about yet, or we want to talk about in a certain way, or again, we want to channel people into the appropriate SR support request workflow. And then we can escalate it. And there's a whole army of people ready to escalate there and not just talk to them. And so we're having some conversations on that because some people have been, we've had conversations that other people, parts of the org, were uncomfortable with. And again, that goes back to, I mean, there we've got to do some training and we've got to do some, and they've got to do better communicating about what is appropriate and what is not. And this particular issue is red hot, so don't touch it. But, often, again, going back to the job role thing, the community manager, influence marketer is kind of left hanging and kind of has to make it up on the fly.
No, I think it's true. It's I've often said, you know, we all need some sort of a cheat sheet handbook of so we know kind of on an updated basis. What a wonderful asset that would be. Company Gap, to have a constantly updated talk about, don't talk about list of items. And it would mean seeing that community manager, influence marketer as sort of frontline.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be briefed alongside other pieces of the organization. I mean, in a big organization, this probably applies more to the super big organizations where it's hard to keep everybody on the exact same page in terms of roadmap and what's public, private, et cetera, what's appropriate at any given time. So best not speak if you don't know. But just, I think, as a gap analysis, really understanding that person has that much frontline responsibility and can get caught in those conversations if they're not made part of a briefing process.
Although I totally agree with you, but the same thing happens to an SE. Same thing happens to a conference speaker.
Every single person that's ever been on a phone for tech support. I started out at EMC in tech support. I was there for over 2 years, and you were the front line. And you probably had the least public training in regards to that, to be really honest about it. You knew the product inside and out, but boy, did you not know what to expect in regards to other tangential conversations that may be brought up.
Right. I mean, I do get PR advisories at our company, and before they send out a press release, I'll get a memo. But I'm not quite sure why I'm on that list, and I don't know how I got on that list, and I don't know who is on that list. So, and that's just for press releases or – you know, things that might be sensitive from that department. So obviously I'm a big believer that there are many more things going on than just press releases in a company. if you read my latest blog post, you would know that about the operational story of a company. You know, nobody gets briefed on those. It's just kind of – we just kind of wing it. I don't know. Amy and Matt, when you were in the big company, did you guys get PR advisories too? Did you know what was coming out?
I actually sought the PR team out. I mean, that's part of the org busting that I go out and do. And explained, you know, this could be uncomfortable if I don't know more. Yeah. And so I, you know, that's why I'm sort of an advocate of, if it's not a process, if you haven't sought that out, if there's a way to break that down and make sure that you're part of that chain, it is so helpful just to even give any indication that you should be alert to something, you know, before it washes over you.
All right. Matt, are we too far afield from our topic of going private in public spaces?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because what we're getting at is that it's an exceptionally complex conversation, that it's about people. It's about product. It's about brand management. It's about how all of us connect into our specific org charts due to the size of our company and the maturity of the social to support to product management interactions. I mean, it really affects everything quite universally, and I think that's why it's been so fascinating to digest in public as we do on the Geek Whispers.
Mm, this was good. This was meaty. I had no idea we were going to all these places, but I actually learned something myself in this conversation.
That always makes me happy. Good. Well, what can we leave being sure of? I mean, I say each one of us take a moment and think about that. I said something I didn't anticipate saying that I'm pretty happy about, that I really do think there is a lost opportunity in the process of tech support leading to sort of inbound marketing opportunities through like evangelizing the stories there. There's a lot of meat there. There's a lot to be said for a company that does that well. And I don't see people doing that well.
I think that it is to hire the right people and treat them like adults and train them appropriately.
Amen.
And when you do those things, then you really, I think at any company, the people are the greatest resource. And that goes vendor, customer, everything in between. It is, that is the key differentiator, and that's what makes things successful and keeps small fire drills from becoming large flaming infernos.
Well, and I'm aside from the online offline thing, didn't I have one that there's another missing piece? I've dropped so much brilliant wisdom on this podcast, I can't.
I'll have to go back and take notes on our own. I remember the platform piece, but I can't remember the one before that. For some reason, it got blended with the whole.
Yeah. Whatever. Keep
Damn
going.
It. Yeah.
Okay. My other conclusion: social media is dead.
Oh, get out of here! What are you, BuzzFeed?
That's the title. I know. 7 ways that social media.
There we go. Now you're BuzzFeed.
Yeah. Now we really don't do social media. We use it, but we really don't do it.
Nope.
We consume the services of it, but there is no doing social media any more than there's doing faxing. Take that. And
take that org chart, inanimate objects.
Yeah. I mean, I think my big takeaway was the online offline, which we've talked about a lot, but between that and the we don't do social media, I think I'm actually running a very different program than I thought I was, or I would have described in a different way a year ago.
Yeah, and John, you struck me when you said it. I'll say it a third time because it needs to be said that that influencer marketing is not an online job. It's an in-person job that utilizes online resources. Like that's mind-blowing. That's actually, when you think about how people staff and org and budget, that's revolutionary.
Yeah. Actually, it's going to affect the conversation I have with my new VP next week. So thank you.
My pleasure. All right. Well, thank you both. I mean, this was yet another wonderful episode of the Geek Whisperers. If you like what you're hearing, we really appreciate if you could leave us a review on iTunes, to give us a thumbs up on Facebook and or share us there. Twitter, as you know, a retweet always goes well. So anything you could do to help us get more eyes on our work here is always appreciated. So thank you and enjoy the rest of your week.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Hold on, gotta prep.
Sorry, my kids are gonna be like, Mama, what's wrong with you?
All right.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And that's not how.
Yeah, start again.